He's back. We've got Mr. Bob Kitchen of Maple Hill Golf for our June installment. So order up. Bob Kitchen, Maple Hill. Two dudes, one cart. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. And thank you, as always, for listening. Well, I bet you guys will never guess who I have tonight. But I appreciate everybody that is surviving the Sahara Desert with us. 100% humidity temperatures that we have in Indiana. And I know Mr. Bob Kitchen from Maple Hill Golf is also filling that up there in Michigan. Bob, how you doing today?
Good, brother. It's good to be in my room underneath the ceiling fan. I got my air conditioner back. My air conditioner went out last week and I had a new one installed. A buddy of mine that comes in the store all the time owns the heating and cooling business, thank God. So, it's good. It's good to be inside. I played in the golf outing the last 2 days in a row too, so just like playing in the sun.
Well, how'd that work for you? Well, how'd that go? I saw some of the stuff on social media, but I purposely didn't read it because I was going to ask you about it anyway. But go
ahead. Well, it don't take long to get loose when it's 97 degrees and 97% humidity. And I got to play with my son, which is my favorite thing. So I got to play with him and my nephew and my brother yesterday. And 2 days ago, I got to play with some of my buddies and, it was great, man. I'll tell you what, 18 holes is all I had. I said to somebody when we were walking off the course, I'm glad it wasn't 19 holes because I don't know if I would have made one more hole even. When it's that hot, it just zaps you. But it's ball was moving, greens were good, and thank God it was windy. Other than that, it would have been literally playing golf in the sun. So just go shade as best you can, and
it
was good.
I played on Sunday up in northern Indiana, and if it was not for that wind, it would have probably been unbearable because, we were down into the woods a little bit, and that heat was just sitting down there, and if that the wind wouldn't have pushed through, man, it would have been.
Yeah, if the air was stagnant, it would have been death, yeah. Yeah, I hear you. It's, it's getting back in your car, and the belt buckle burns you. Like that.
Yeah.
It was that kind of hot.
Yeah, lucky my buddy drove up there. I told, man, I was having a hard time keeping my eyes open. We got in there and kicked the AC on, and that all started hitting. Oh, man. I was like, wake me up when we're close.
Exactly right, buddy.
So, Bob, what's your thoughts on the U.S. Open? What did you think about the conditions? What did you think about how the guys handled it?
I had no... I think they bumped it down to a par 70 again, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
We already went over that, but I can't stand that. I thought it was, I actually think these last 2 weeks in a row have been great golf. And I can tell you that it kind of shows in the numbers, our sales are definitely up right away when those tournaments are over. Like even those nights, our sales just go to the moon. Like people are watching it. They're excited. I really, really, I'm not sure if I felt more bad for Fleetwood or if I felt more good for Keegan. It was kind of tearing at my heartstrings. And I know everybody wants to talk about how, USA and USA and all that, get that chant going. And of course he's our Ryder Cup captain and all that fun stuff, but it's really hard to not feel bad for Tommy Fleetwood, man. What a class act. Everyone loves him. He's had, I think it was 41 top tens without a win. And so I think it's 42 now. You could kind of feel the wheels falling off. And even on number 18, when he switched clubs, did you watch it real close? Or no? On 18, when he switched clubs, I was thinking to myself, Tommy, don't switch clubs, dude. Go with your gut instinct and just hit the ball. And then he switched to wedge and he hit it on the front edge of the green and ended up three putting and losing it. And even if we went to a playoff, I think it would have been a 75% chance that Keegan would have won. But because just momentum had gone that way and Fleetwood's posture and everything else just didn't. It just didn't quite look right. And Keegan was all fired up and he stuffed that 9-iron in there on 18 and he dropped that bomb on 15 and he made that putt on 18. And my goodness. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what your take on it was, but that was kind of my take. I felt great for Keegan. And I also felt terrible for Fleetwood at the exact same time. Like, it's just hard to watch someone lose like that.
It happens. I mean, that's the way it goes. You or I could be out there in the middle of the fairway and, you could have been hitting
Fleetwood
darts all day.
17 and 18?
Yes.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, that's why you play all 18, not just 16 or 17. But anyhow, good for Keegan. Like if he does get to be player coach for the Ryder Cup, man, that would be just super freaking cool to watch. And it's kind of nice to see the resurgence of Keegan. Like I think he was kind of gone for 5 or 6 years, I feel like. And I think he did something last year a little bit, and his name came like kind of popped back up, and he but I think he was gone for a while. Like, and I don't mean gone. I mean like he wasn't relevant. He wasn't winning anything.
Well, they took his putter away from him.
Yeah, I know. I
That
know
did
that.
not help him at all. You know, win a
No, I
major,
know.
take
They
my
were like
putter.
picking on him and Adam Scott, Bernard Langer, and the definition of the word advantage is that one person can do it and somebody else can't. So if everyone can, that's not advantage. And if it truly was better, then everybody would do it. But it's not advantage, and everyone doesn't do it. So why the hell did they ever get rid of the anchoring putters or long putters or any of that crap? It doesn't change the skill that it takes to play the sport of golf. I'm sure of that. If it did, everybody'd be way better at golf, and all we'd sell is belly and long putters.
Well, and they only hurt four players. I mean, they hurt.
That's what I mean. They're picking on these guys, and I.
Bernard, let's see, Webb Simpson.
Yep, Webb. On the champions, Bernard Langer, Adam Scott, Keegan
And
Bradley.
Keegan Bradley. That was it. That's about the four guys that was their game.
Who's the guy that won it last year with the Jailbird? Right, Wyndham Clark. Did he used something longer, I think, or counterbalanced or something? I think he used something that was a little different. But he's the one that went to PXG and sucked, and then came back to the Titleist and started winning. But I think there was something up with the putter too. I'm almost sure Wyndham Clark uses like a 38 inch or something like that. But anyhow, just that whole and golf's already intimidating enough, and it's hard enough, and there's a billion zillion rules, and people are intimidated by the rules. So when they did all those stupid rules in the putters, like I was totally not a fan, as you can probably tell. I just thought that was asinine. Like what? It doesn't help. You still have to read the green and hit the putt. Like, who cares what? Anchor it, don't anchor it. Who cares? Do
That's
whatever you
why
want.
you never leave the USGA alone too long because they'll come up with something.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. They just don't want it to be stagnant. Well, what do you guys think about this anchoring? It's one of these old curmudgeons that goes, I don't really like people anchoring their putters. And like, dude, get over it. Things evolve. Like, and it was better. Everyone would do it, and it's not better. So,
What did
whatever.
you think about the U.S. Open?
You talk about 2 weeks ago with JJ? Phenomenal. What an ending. What a story. Kind of the little engine that could. What a hard fought win. The only guy that shot under par with the par 70 thing. And then I think one of the best shots of the day was Victor Hovland's second shot on 18 when he hit it 2 feet behind Spahn's shot. Like, that was so crucial. And I still just explained JJ making that 64 foot giant bender, but what a cool ending, especially for that guy and his cute little kids. And he was at Walgreens or CVS, whatever, at 3 in the morning that day. Like, that's just what a storybook ending. And I think 2 years ago he's fighting to get his card back, and just what a cool guy. And what he class act, the way he handled it, guy from Los Angeles, fought his way through some diversity, and just I couldn't be happier for him. That was great. And the competition was solid, steady, right around him. Everybody was kinda and who was the Robert, what's that guy's name? The guy that took second or third. He's from England, or
McIntyre?
yes, McIntyre. What a class act, man. Kind of a goofy looking guy, but I absolutely loved the way he handled that whole situation. And like, he was just a classy guy about everything. And I love these stories that come out of it too, with his little daughter going, "Daddy, we gotta go home. It's bedtime." And he's like, "We're staying up late tonight." Like, yay! Like, these guys are still just regular people, man. Like, we all want to turn these guys into gods. I just love it. I absolutely love it. His beautiful little family there with him, and all the things that go along with that are just such a. And it was Father's Day, right? So that was super cool. Super cool.
My only thing was I they that when Sam Burns did not get relief in the lowest point of that fairway, when they gave that second guy came over and said, "You're not getting relief," I'm like, "There's no way this ball goes anywhere he wants it to."
No, no, and then the guy's standing there and it's squishy, yeah. And plus, he's in the fairway, so I could mildly see it if the ball was in the rough and he was maybe going to get a drop into a better piece of grass or part where the patrons had trampled the grass or something. But he's in the fairway. Like the thing that these rules officials, I don't think necessarily always factor in is the human element of this. The human element or the spirit of the rule is to make sure that it's played fairly and equally for everyone. So tell me what the difference is if that guy hits the ball from where it is or moves it to a little drier spot. Okay. But he's already in the fairway, not in a divot. The ball's sitting good, other than it's in casual water, clearly. So where's the harm in letting this guy move his ball over 6 feet and drop it on grass that's not soaked? Like, I just don't get it. I mean, have a little bit of common sense behind it, too. Like, dude, it's pretty close. I'd say it's marginal, but your ball's already in the fairway. Just move it 6 feet over here and hit it from there. Like, who cares? You're going to change your angle by 6 feet? That's going to change a lot? Like, no, it's not. So just that was very frustrating. And if I was him, I would have been – I don't think I would have handled it as well as he did. Yeah. I think he was pretty much a gentleman about it. I'm sure he didn't want to get fined or any of the things that go along with the freedom of speech in our country. As soon as you say something that goes against somebody, you're going to get fined, even though we allegedly have free speech.
Well, it's kind of like the equivalent of letting the refs – finish the game. You know what I mean? You're leaving it in the hand for them to do that because it's like, hey, this is pretty important moment in the tournament.
Absolutely.
To be cognizant of that.
Yeah.
Why absolutely. You wouldn't give the guy a shot? Because who knows? He was, you know, he was still in contention, so to speak, right
oh,
then.
No but question. That, but it changes shot, everything. People are like, oh, well, he finished plus one or whatever. Like, no. It literally changes everything. If it changes the difference between him and Spawn, and then Spawn has to play differently, and Spawn hit a phenomenal shot on 17, and obviously that putt on 18 is probably going to go down in history. But the drive on 17 was unbelievable. He almost got a hole-in-one on a par four. Like, it was incredible. You know, then he almost got an eagle, and he tapped it in for birdie. Man, it was absolutely incredible. But the whole feeling of everything changes if the guy doesn't double that hole. And, like, just – it's – it. I don't know. I wish common sense played into it a little bit more than it does. But as Ben Franklin once said, the common sense is by no means common.
Right. I heard a interesting interview with Sasha McKenzie. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but he does a lot of studies, does a lot of stuff in golf and ground plates. He's a doctor and either way, he's co-founder of the Stack system.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Yep.
So anyway, he made an interesting point about the USGA. He was like, you know, they were talking about, I think it was this Burns not getting relief and the choices they made, like they were doing it because they didn't want to finish on Monday. Cause they were talking about ratings and he said, then they want to do this ball rollback. And he said, really, the PGA Tour alone or the European Tour, they don't need the RNA and they don't need the USGA. He said, you know, and I thought, that's a pretty interesting fact because in the end, they could have their own rules and then all they have to do is those rules only apply at the U.S. Open or the British Open.
Right,
which I thought was interesting as time goes on and – they start trying to push in this ball roll back. And it's just like the thing with the putters. I mean, you would think it would come down to the USGA go, look, this is what we think. Let's get the players to vote on it and go from there because, you know, really that's who you're dependent on the PGA Tour. But
yeah,
I understand they can do whatever they want with the ranks below that if you want to play on a USGA amateur or so on and so forth. I just thought it was an interesting point that, damn, he's right. They literally could.
Yeah. Well, I still think that like the nothing stays the same forever, right? Like,
right.
You're almost saying like colleges don't need the NCAA. You're not. That's probably true.
Right.
They don't know they need to have this governing body that just makes weird rules and nobody, like, why are we following this? Why are we doing this? Who the hell's the NCAA? So, like, PGA is like, why do we have to follow USGA? We can just do
Right.
whatever we want. And you know, RNA over for the European tour, like, we don't need that. We can do whatever we want. So, and LIV has kind of done that, right? Like, they've kind of got their own set of rules and they changed a few things, and we'll see. The future, I think it's bright. I think we're heading in the right direction. We just need to get some more younger blood in there that's got a little bit more forward thinking to make sure that our sport survives and flourishes like it should, because it's such, like we've talked about 1,000 times, it's the greatest sport in the world.
Yeah, and I just find all that it's just funny how I listened to these interviews and they all kind of wrap together, was that even in, and I had forgotten, I read the book, Harvey Pinnock's Little Red Book.
Yep.
And there was even comments in there about courses gonna, you know, are starting to get a little overpowered, and hell, that these are notes he's been doing since like the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And I'm like, they were already saying the same thing back then. It's kind of like climate change. You know, we've been up against it all this time, but nothing really ever happens.
Right. Well, he was definitely ahead of his time and kind of looking down the pipeline of what's going to happen. And oh, here we are. Now we're in the future. Now we are the future. So now what do we do?
Well, Bob, I received some interesting questions. One I thought was that I this next one is, what are the ups and downs of a golf business, and what are the struggles in a family-owned business?
I'll take that one part at a time. I'll get to the family part in a minute. Ups and downs in the golf business. That's a great question. The answer is real long. I'll make it as short as I can. back in the day, back in the 90s, like TaylorMade made the burner bubble, and that was about it. You could get, like, there was a tour version called the Tour Burner Bubble or whatever, Tour Burner. And that was it. If you didn't like that, you bought the Callaway. And Callaway had a club called the Big Bertha. And if you didn't like the Big Bertha, then you maybe bought the Ping I2s or the Ping Zings or whatever that was called at the time. And then if you didn't like that, it was the Cobra Oversize. And if you didn't like Cobra, maybe the Cleveland VAS or whatever that would be. You know, Wilson had some stuff, but none of it was that popular. And Cleveland wasn't even really around yet. Mizuno existed, but they were real, real niche. Now, every company makes every club known to mankind. I think Callaway right now has, like, if you count the black and the copper irons, like, they have like 12 or 14 different irons right now. So, like, I got a guy I'm talking to right now. I want to get in the golf business. I'm like, bro, you can't be everything to everyone. It is really difficult. And one of the most frustrating things, and this is going to be my main point about this whole thing, is that you can't do what you want to do. And that means, okay, I just bought all these golf clubs and I just paid my bill from Cobra or Ping or Titleist or whatever. Now they're going to tell me where I can sell them and how I can sell them. So a guy says to me today, he's like, you guys don't sell FootJoy shirts? I'm like, yeah, we sell a ton of FootJoy shirts. He's like, well, they're not on your website. I'm like, yeah, FootJoy made us take them off our website for breaking some sales policy. One of my guys broke a sales policy like last year, and we're in a year and a half penalty box of not being able to sell FootJoy shirts on our website. So, yeah, we do sell them, but I literally, when I buy them, I have to sell them through my store, and that's the only way I can sell them currently. At some point in time, that will go back to normal, but if me or one of my guys, and this was even a new employee that did it, he just screwed up and put something out there for a weekend and they saw it and terminated our ability to sell online. So I mean, like, there's just so many rules and regulations and policies and lawyers involved. I've talked to the first 15 years I did this job, my current role of kind of running the club side of Maple Hill. Hard goods is what you'd call it. First 15 years, I don't think I talked to a lawyer ever. And then probably the next 5 years, I met every lawyer from every single company, because we were pushing the boundaries and trying to figure out ways how to sell stuff and, you know, try to circumvent the rule or try to edge the rule or whatever to just have a competitive advantage, man. Like, I'm willing to outwork them. Just tell me what I can do. Stop telling me what I can't do. So it's just so frustrating to like, it used to be craftsmen and like regular folks that ran the golf business. Like, craftsmen designed the golf club and regular folks is who sold it. Now it's computers design the golf clubs and lawyers run the golf business, which is fine. I know everything, like I said earlier, everything changes and that's all right. It's beautiful. I'm not against it. It's just very, very frustrating for all those hurdles and humps and jumps and bumps and dealing with, well, when you buy this, what are you going to do with it? Where are you going to sell this product? And I'm like, all right, what's the rules on this one? And they go through the whole thing. Well, here's what we want it sold. Here's what we don't want it sold. They all have direct relationships with Amazon, and Amazon's a necessary evil for most of these companies. Most of the companies hate Amazon, but what are you going to do? Not sell to Amazon, right? The world's number one search engine and retail location. You have to have a relationship with them, so they do, and then they, but they don't want to cut your legs out. But they also don't want to make Amazon upset. So it's tough. It's really, really tough. It's not all. If I've ever made it sound like it's all, you know, roses and rainbows and sleeping in, it's not that. It's hard work, but it's also very rewarding, like to actually help someone. And, you know, like my buddy's son came in today. He's a really, really good player and he needed a four hybrid, and help him out with a four hybrid and just see the smile on his face and all that. Very, very rewarding. So there's certainly a lot of, beauty in it, but, there's definitely frustrations, no question. And then the family business thing. Oh Lord. So, do you have any brothers?
No, sir. Only child.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. You got the king of the castle. Well, I have one brother. He's 2 years older than me, Andy, and he's on a lot of our social media stuff for the business. And back, we're 0% alike. He's left-handed, I'm right-handed. I guess our general look is 10% alike, other than that. We're just not alike, which is great because we're kind of the yin and the yang, and that's what makes the business work. But I'm going to say maybe 15, 20 years ago, when we first started running the business, we wanted to kill each other too often. And our dad was like, all right, no more. You're doing the books. You're doing the selling. And like he just complete separation of responsibilities and roles, and that really helped us. It really kept us out of each other's way. And then as time goes on, sometimes you kind of have to overlap in certain decisions, and as we got a higher percentage of the business, I'm like, I don't like you doing that. And like, I don't like you doing that. And so it can be very challenging. At the end of the day, we're all after the same result. No question. We're trying to set our employees up for success, give our customers the best deal we possibly can. And let's turn a small profit. In the meantime, let's sell a bunch of whatever the heck we're buying. Let's sell as much as we can, move some volume. So some people are like, oh, yeah, it must be cool. You get to see your dad all the time. I'm like, it is cool. I get to see my dad all the time, and I'm never going to take that for granted. But at the same time, like, if he has to stop and talk to me about his idea for an hour and a half every day, every week. So we had a little buffer in there, and then he started talking to Steve and Jason and different employees we've had over the years, and that really softens the blow. And because you just get so close, you all start butting heads too much, and you need a little buffer in there, so.
Yeah, I can imagine that it's just like, I mean, you put it perfectly. It's rewarding, but there's also difficulties. You know, it's nice to go in and be able to see your family, but it's also nice to have some separation and make some decisions. But you know, when your family outside of there and your family in there, it's a lot going on. And you hope none of that carries outside of the office, but sometimes
it is.
You never
it
know.
Is. Yeah, well, yeah, no doubt about it. We do a really good job of leaving it at work, and sometimes our employees have a harder time with that than what we do. You know, we're friends with a lot of our employees too, but I can yell at somebody during the day and at night go out and hang out with them and not feel a thing. And sometimes they carry a bit of a grudge about it. And I'm like, that's your problem, dude, not mine. I can right. separate it. I can just drop it at work and go. And so it's hard to hire friends is one thing, and then when they start working for you and you actually really like the person to get along with them, they kind of become friends, and then it's, you still gotta have that separation. Like, dude, when we're at work, you still kind of gotta do what I say. Like, I still own the place and I'm kind of the boss, so I'm sorry, but you kind of gotta listen to what I say. But we've had a lot of good people and over the years that kind of run a nice buffer between Andy and myself, and treat it like it's their own. You know, we've had some of the girls we've had over the years come and go, and some of the guys we've had come and go that have been just instrumental in our business and helping out, and kind of run that fine line between Andy and myself and trying to navigate what's best for the business and trying to, you know, part of this is good from this and part of this is good from that. And let's piece this together and let's come up with the best solution. And that's what makes it work, man. You just can't be too hard headed. You got to listen to what everybody's saying, and don't always assume you're right and don't always assume you're wrong.
This next question is, has the golf consumer changed much over the past few years? Example, like higher golf IQ, or has it all pretty much stayed the same and you're just selling different equipment?
No, that's actually funny that you quite asked that question, because I was just thinking about that earlier. I think that with COVID and the massive boom that happened in that span, a lot of young people joined golf, 20s, 30s, maybe early 40s, like younger than me. I'm 46. And I think that the coolness factor is maybe more evident now than ever. Like, the amount of people that want to do custom ferrules and want to have a Ventus red shaft in his driver and a blue in his fairway and a black in his hybrid or whatever, like the, whatever, just overanalyze whatever or just look cool. Or I think that the kind of look at me type of stuff has gone up considerably. But I also think that that's, some of it's healthy, like these cool, weird swag head covers and these weird OGO, or I think it's OGO head covers that are out there. And there's a ton of different head covers, like a million of them. And I think some of it's pretty fun. And, but man, oh man, people are spending real money on this stuff. I didn't think you could spend $200 on a putter cover, but I guess it happens every day. I couldn't fathom doing that, no matter how much money I have or don't have. I'd never do that. But a ton of people do, so it shows you what I know. So yeah, it's definitely evolved. The guy 15 years ago or even 6 years ago was much more like, here's my options, I'm just going to play within the rules. Now it's like, well, I can do anything. I can paint my clubs, you know, get them custom painted and custom grind and all this weird ferrules and God knows what. Like, you still got to swing the club, dude. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I personally think low scores are kind of cool. I'd rather have low scores than clubs that look really sweet, but I'm not sure everybody's like that. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's
evolved. It's definitely evolved. It's gotten younger and more customized, I think would be the way I'd word it.
Yeah, and the next question is, do you think the golfers of today are just drowning in information?
Oh, Lord. Oh, the amount of people that want to put a slightly different shaft in their wedge or different flex, or can you make them half degree upright? Like, dude, the I call it paralysis by analysis. Like, the amount of time and information people have and spend on things, my advice is just go hit them. Just go play. If you get a really, really repetitive swing, even if the club is misfit for you, you're going to make it work because your swing's repetitive. And even if it's, you know, I got a 105X and I really would like a 105 stiff, but tipped, you know, hard stepped one or hard step two, like, dude, you ain't gonna be able to tell the difference. You know, start breaking 75 every single time you play, and then I'll talk to you about all these different crazy little things. And but they just believe that this is what they need, and they go to these boutique high end fitting places and they kind of brainwash them into, here's what you must buy. And I don't know. I think it's kind of sad. They want to believe so bad that they do. You know, I think that there's a lot of things like that. I think people on both sides of politics just want to believe so bad that they just believe their guy is right. And like, dude, the answer is always somewhere in the middle. And then the same thing I think is true with golf clubs. Like, they just want to believe that exactly this person's right, or like if I just buy the putter that JJ Spawn uses, I'll be able to make all my putt. Has nothing to do with it. This guy can read greens. I mean, he's freaking great. It's not because he uses a lab DF3 or because Keegan plays a jailbird AI. Like, they're just great. They're just great at golf. They don't have a job.
Now, Bob,
Most everybody listening to this podcast probably has a job. If you
you're
want to get really
telling
good, listeners, quit your job and go to hit the range forever. And then you'll be really good at golf, but
you're
you'll be
telling
beating
me
pros.
when you when Bob Kitchen was a little kid and his mom took him out and got some new shoes, you didn't run up and down the hallway going, "Look how much faster I am." Did you not do that when you were little?
I honestly don't think I did. I was never the guy who wanted any attention. I didn't. It wasn't like, look at me, look at my new shoes. I wanted to look nice, but I was never like, I never wore anything to show off to anybody, and I still don't care.
I remember when I was little, my mom got
I know
me
what you're talking about.
a new pair of shoes. We went to my grandparents' house. It's probably one of the best memories I have of my grandparents. And my grandma was like, "You got new shoes?" I go, "Yeah." And I ran down the hallway. I go, "Look how much faster I am in these shoes." And she's like, "I don't ever remember seeing you run before, so I don't know."
Well, there's some advantages to being an only child, Bubba. I was the younger sibling, and I had an older brother, and I had my cousin Dan. We were like three brothers, to be honest. And I just didn't. I never. I don't know. It's just I was never like that. I think I am weird, and I think I was weird when I was young too. I'm just kind of built different. I don't care about any of that kind of thing, and I think a lot of people do. And like, oh, did you get the new Jordans? I was never that kind of guy. I don't care. I don't even know what they are. I could care less. But there's plenty of people like that. So. Whatever. I'm not saying I'm better. I'm just different. It's
No,
fine.
there's nothing wrong with that. That's what make the world go round.
Exactly right. You gotta have a little bit of salt and a little bit of pepper. It's all good.
You kind of delved into this one question. It says, "Is lie angle really that important?"
So yeah, I mean, swing path is more important. So our old ping rep, our last ping rep, the one we have right now, we've had for a while, and the one before that we had for my whole life. And he always fit into either blue or green, like 1 or 2 degrees upright, and he played orange, 2 degrees flat, just to keep the face from shutting and keeping the ball from going left. Because I've said it before, everybody thinks the slice is bad until you hook. Hook's worse. A bad slice is worse because the ball's not even hit, but a bad hook is worse than a bad slice, probably. Anyhow, the lie angle can help direct the ball slightly over what you don't want it to do. If you don't want it to hook, go flatter. If you do want it to hook, or if you're losing the ball to the right, go more upright. But swing path still matters more. So I'll take a guy with a good swing path and misfit clubs over a perfectly fit club and an inconsistent bad swing path every day of the year. So does lie angle really matter? Yes, it does. The other thing I can't stand is when people see their golf club at setup and the toes up in the air and go, oh, look at how far up in the air that is. Well, at impact, the golf club's bowing down, the toe moves towards the ground. Don't hold the golf club and go, look at this lie angle. It's not that, it's dynamic. It's actually when it's during impact when the shaft's bowing and you're swinging and your body posture is different too. So, yes, lie angle does matter. Is it the biggest factor? No, I wouldn't say so. I would say shaft weight, shaft flex. Both matter more than lie angle, but yeah, you should pay attention to it. You should try to get it as flush as you can, or try to help get a lie angle that's going to help give you the ball flight that you are trying to desire or get to. So,
Has the internet, YouTube specifically, created a helpful space for coaches to reach more students, or do you think it's created more of an obstacle?
this is somebody's question.
Yeah. Oh, this is my question, actually.
I was gonna say that's a really good question. Sounds like you. oh God, is that ever a loaded question? YouTube videos to watch, man. Oh man, if I had a nickel for every time somebody told me, oh, I watched a video on YouTube last night about my driver, and my hand was here. Now I'm gonna move my hand to here, and I think I'm gonna get this elbow. I'm like, oh my God, dude. Like, there's just no. This is going to work for everyone's solution. There just isn't. I wish there was. I wish it was just the same swing's going to work great for everybody, but it's just not. You get a guy with long arms, and you get a guy with short arms, and get a guy that has some sort of ailment in his wrists or elbows or knees or hips or anything like that, or different age groups and all the different things. Like, it just doesn't work the same for everybody. So, is it a bad thing to watch a YouTube video? I wouldn't say it's a bad thing. I'd say it's a bad thing to watch three different YouTube videos from three different people. Which I know people do that too. And they kind of take something from this and take something from that. And then they're out there with 80 swing thoughts. And like, my God, like my brother yesterday, he was struggling off the tee. And I said, dude, here's what I do. When I'm in a bad funk, I take a practice swing. All I think about is the club face and impact. I don't care about anything else. Get that club face squared at impact. Take a practice swing, stand over the ball for half a second, pull the trigger and hit it. And he started hitting it way, way better. He was standing over it and hands and hands and hands and hands and changing his head and all this crap. And I'm like, dude, just set it down and hit it. And he was like, man, it's way less brains involved. I'm like, yeah, just hit it. He's golfed forever. I mean, he plays 4 or 5 times a week. But you get all these different thoughts going. So YouTube's fine. Just find somebody you like. Stick with that one person. Don't keep jumping.
Yeah, I think 80 swing thoughts is probably a low number. I'm definitely taking the over on that one. There's way more. I know what's going on in my head when I'm standing over the ball.
One of my favorite lines ever from my one friend. He says, I've narrowed it down to 12 swing thoughts, and they all start with don't.
Yeah. Yeah, that's.
That was Johnny Allen. He's one of the funniest.
I love that. That's a true, that can't be any more true, because there's people that you're all, I don't want to hit it in the water. I don't want to hit it in the bunker. I don't want to hit it left. You don't want to hit it right. Where do you want to hit it? That's all you should
do. Don't flare the face open. Don't hood the face. Don't shut that thing down. Like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Whew. I was one of my favorite things to do. Like, sometimes before I go to bed, I'll look at YouTube and I'll find a video that says, try this or whatever, to get you to watch it. I like to read the comments.
Yeah.
Because there's always at least 1,000 guys that apparently are PGA professionals. I'm like, oh, this ain't true. You should do this. And other guy's like, yeah, you can't do this. You can't do that. And I'm like, there's some poor sap in Topeka, Kansas that can't get to a golf coach who has now watched this video and is even more confused by the comments. It's
exactly right.
It's the equivalent of reading reviews on a product you're thinking about buying on Amazon.
Yes, which are now written by AI, at least.
Yeah, you're like, oh, there's, and it's like, you could get 12 positive views, that one negative one, like, yeah, I'm not buying it. Never mind.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my goodness, I'm going to hit all good chips with this Cleveland Smart Soul wedge. And then the next guy down, hit it fat, the first 6 shots, club sucks, sold it. And you're like, well, maybe it does suck. Like, dude, you got to just form your own opinion. Like, and my mom always says, if you think you're right, or if you think you're wrong, you're probably right.
Yeah.
Like, what, you know, whatever you think, that's probably what the results are going to be.
It's,
if you think you can do it, or if you think you can't do it, you're probably right. So that's the, God,
every,
the internet.
Good every Lord. Coach, every coach or instructor that I've talked to, they all have the same story that, you know, I had this guy coming in. We were working on something. He was doing really good. And then all of a sudden he comes in and he's taking a swing. And I'm, you know, they're like, well, what's that? And the guy, every time the student turns around, goes, well, I was watching these YouTube videos. And they're like, why don't you just do what we're working on? Well, mm-hmm. I was struggling. Jeremy, one of the coaches, he's like, you know, you tell everybody beforehand, we're going to make some changes. It's going to struggle. It's not going to be easy, but once we get there, you'll start to see the fruits of the labor. And he said, probably 70% of the people that he coaches, unless they're kids, can't do it.
Right.
He said, most of these adult men, they're like, no, I can't, you know, I'm trying to win money off my buddies. I'm going to find something to get me. You know, they hit two bad balls to range.
This weekend. Well, yeah. I need a lesson on Wednesday. I'm playing on Friday and I have to be good. Like, yeah. That's not exactly how it works.
But it's always the same thing, and it made me wonder. I'm like, you know, I think it's great, but at the same time, I can see just because I went down the rabbit hole many a times getting on there going, oh, that's interesting. And then all those videos stop popping up that are related to that. And you just keep getting, you know, your story starts getting wider and wider and wider on what, you know, what you should do. And it's like, you know what? I did a lot better when I just went out and played.
Yep. Just go hit it. And yeah, I've seen plenty of guys that are just kind of self-taught and they figured it out and they got some IQ behind it and they can get the club face back to square and they know what impact looks like. And they've watched guys on TV, just watch their swings and just see, like, you don't have to swing exactly like them, but there's a lot of, they're all in balance. I know you could argue that Scheffler's not, but he's still in balance, even though his foot's sliding and he's torqued into a pretzel. He hits it hard. I mean, at impact, he's in balance. He's, and it's consistent as hell. But again, he doesn't have a job. All he does is golf.
Well, Bob, since you're an owner of a golf course, what's your thoughts on, you know, there's a lot of, like, matter of fact, we just interviewed the owner of EA Carts. I don't know if you've ever heard of them or not. They're based out of Indiana. They're doing a lot in the YouTube space with a lot of big names, but, you know, they have golf bikes. They have their golf carts all come with Apple CarPlay. They have speakers built on them. They're really sharp. Like, you can have four people on a cart, stuff like that. But what's your thought as a golf course owner about having those types of carts as kind of your fleet, so to speak, of golf carts that people that can come in and use?
Well, there's more stuff to go wrong with them. So if anything breaks or anything needs help, there's more things that you might need to fix. But I do think that the have you ever heard of the Shark Experience?
Mm-mm.
No, they have that out west at one of the courses right near our house in Palm Springs in La Quinta, California. It's called Big Rock, and they got these golf carts that have all got two speakers built in and then GPS golf, but you can also put on the football game on Sundays and watch different sports or at least listen to them through the speakers. And it's Greg Norman has something to do with it. That's why it's called the Shark Experience. But it's sweet. I mean, it's a game changer, man. It's people go there sometimes on Sundays just to watch football on their cart or listen to a sport on that screen. Like, it's really cool. So again, nothing stays the same forever. So I'm for it. As long as people are still moving a little bit, you know, you got to kind of, you're there to golf, so let's keep it moving. But so we're not taking 5 hours to play 18 holes. But yeah, I think I don't mind the motorcycles. I don't mind the surfboards. I don't mind any of that stuff. As long as they're not driving over the greens and the tees and being respectful, I think it's fine. I think one of the things I like most about golf is when I get to play with my buddies and hang out with my buddies is riding with a cart with somebody and catching up with them and talking to them. Like, I got to be with my son yesterday for 4 hours and 15 minutes or whatever. And the day before that, a buddy of mine named Bob that I don't get to see a super ton, and he almost never golfs. So I get to ride around with him for 4 hours and catch up with him and ask about his kids and all that. So I don't know. I like the camaraderie about as much at this age. I like the camaraderie, but as much as I like the golf, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think there's a couple of golf courses now that have, you know, basically single carts.
Yeah.
Which it's like, I get it. I mean, it's kind of like the golf bike. It probably picks up pace of play because everybody can go to their own ball. But like you said, at the same time, you lose all of that. You lose all the time talking to your buddy, whether it's, man, I hit the crap out of that, or my God, I hope I didn't kill that guy over there, you know, stuff like that. You know, you miss all that. I just was curious from your standpoint of actually, you know, owning, having a golf course and how you would feel about that, about especially like the golf bikes. I don't know if there's any more liability than there are with a golf cart, because you kind of come in there and you're signing, hey, you know, I have a driver's license, I know how to drive, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And the kids, like, we don't allow them to drive until they're 18, even though 16 is legal driving age, obviously. But I mean, age 18 to 21, even age 18 to probably 24, put a bunch of those kids on a golf bike and tell me how many problems you're going to have. It'll be plenty.
I can't believe that got that high out of the bunker.
Yeah, exactly. Jumping over stuff and just, you know, if alcohol gets involved, it just gets weird. And so, I mean, I don't know. I mean, respect is respect, and like, just treat it right. You know, we always just leave it how you found it. That's as simple as it gets. So we're all for people having fun. We're definitely not Debbie Downers at our course. We try to do everything we can to make sure that our customers and clientele are having fun and enjoying their what they spent money on, which is what you're paying for, the entertainment of it all. But yeah, as long as they're doing it right, I'm all for it. Go and have fun.
Do you think we're losing or gaining on the respect portion when it comes to golf course etiquette? You think we're moving backwards?
I don't actually. I think we're doing all right. I think that, again, the sport of golf has got kind of a, I'm not going to say we're better than anybody else, but I'd say it's a little different demographic. And it's people that are just pretty educated and well-raised. And, you know, I'd say most places you go, they really get it, and they're respectful of the golf course and make sure that they fix their ball marks and rake the traps and, like, don't just treat it like, who cares, and just throw their trash all over and leave empty cans all over God's green earth on the course. And I don't think we're going backwards. I think the people that – because I also think that one of the greatest things about golf is being a gentleman's sport. Everybody holds each other accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you saw someone being a jackass out on the golf course, someone would probably go over there and say, hey, dude, really? Like, come on. Right, you know, you got to rake the traps after you hit a shot out of the sand. Or I even think if there's a foursome, it'd be really hard-pressed to find four total douchebags all hanging out together. Like, I think one of them would be like, hey, dude, you got to rake when you're done hitting out of the sand. Like, that's just common courtesy. The group behind you might hit it in that spot. They don't want to be in your footprint. Just rake the stupid trap. So I think that's my opinion. I think one out of the four at least would speak up and say something.
I think that's true. Like, I just think right now we're I don't know what the right word is, but we're in a big turnover on old guard, new guard, if you will, of in and out of whatever it's private clubs or whatever. So you're getting, you know, used to all be collared shirts. Now we're down to maybe bladed collar. You know,
yeah,
sometimes
that's just,
hoodies
just,
and t-shirts are accepted. You,
yeah,
you know,
that's
as it
evolution,
moves on.
I think. And I think that as a country, we got a lot of problems.
Oh yeah, yeah.
In the sport of golf is what your question was. I think we're doing all right. I think we are. I think we're holding on pretty. I think we're holding on better than the country is. Let's put it that way.
Now, this next question, I think I know the answer to, but I'm going to let you answer it, obviously. Does Bob use training aids, and what are his thoughts on training aids?
I don't. I have like six different instructors that work for me, and I got one that's both a personal friend of mine and a great instructor. So I just talk to him because I found one that I really like and I get along with. And on top of that, he's a wonderful human being. But I have a couple of my instructors do use training aids, and they're really all about it as far as giving somebody something to feel or to mentally stay inside the stick or stay outside the stick or pull the club back until it brushes this or different things that they want their certain people in their stable of, you know, customers, clients, whatever you want to call it. They want them to work on certain things, and they found something that works well consistently for these people. And I'm not opposed to it. I think a lot of those things, especially the like the speed stick, if you remember that big blue or red stick, and you swung it and it tells you how fast you swung. And I was always like, okay, so now you know how fast you swung. Who cares? So what? When are you going to start swinging this metal stick a million times to get your speed up 1 mile an hour or 2 mile an hour. Like, you could also do that at the gym, just lift weights and work on flexibility.
Right.
The same thing. And no, none of those things have ever lasted over time. And so I'm not opposed to it. I think alignment sticks and certain weighted things and whatever, like, I think it's all fine. I think some of it's definitely hocus pocus, but I'm not opposed to it. If somebody thinks it's helping, let it. Like I said earlier, if you think it's working or don't think it's working, you're probably right. If you think it's working, if it's the mental side of it's helping you, then go ahead and do it.
Well, what I was thinking, Al, that you got that out, I knew you were going to say no, but my thought is this, and I'm giving you this idea for free, so I'm assuming you're going to have your social media team do this.
Here we go.
I want to see Andy,
oh Lord,
wearing every one of your training aids, a la Tin Cup in the Trailer.
Yeah, with all that crap.
On a little promotional video about, we've got all your training aids, and he's sitting there in the TrackMan bay doing some swings. I think that'd be a massive hit.
I think it might be as mainly for laughs. I think it could go viral on like that Foreplay Golf or whatever, that Zyre Golf or whatever on Instagram. But just so you know, Steve, like where we're at as far as my brother goes, currently right this second, as we're filming this, he has three drivers in his bag, and he has four putters in his bag. So I think that tells you something.
That's awesome. That's
he
awesome.
He can't hit anything over a six iron in the air because he hoods it so bad. He literally can't hit a five iron or a hybrid or a fairway wood in the air at all. Not zero. It won't go in the air. So, but he can hit a six iron 220 because he hood smashes it so hard. So he has four putters. He's still at 14 clubs. He has six through pitch, gap, sand, and lob, and then three drivers, four putters. So it's good.
That's a video within itself.
I know. His what's in the bag?
Like, yeah, you thought.
I don't think he's ever shot an. Well, at least I don't think he shoots an honest one because he's just flopping shit. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing.
People thought Mickelson was bad for having two drivers in his bag.
Right. And he's got three. He's got an Elite. He's got a Cobra. And I think maybe a Titleist. He's got the new Cobra Adapt. He's got the Callaway Elite. And I think he might have a Titleist in there. And he's got a Ping putter and Odyssey putter. He just got one of the new Odyssey Square to Squares. And, oh, he's got the old Odyssey Tri-Hat as well.
Well, you know, you just use them six holes at a time, I guess.
it's whatever. It's amazing. It's amazing to watch. He uses different ones for on the green, off the green, downhill, uphill, left to right, right to left, like whatever. He claims there's a method to it. I don't think that's true, but whatever.
Thank God he doesn't have a thought bubble going. I couldn't even imagine all the do's and don'ts he's got flying around in his head.
Oh, Lord.
So, did you get in your round at Butler National?
Oh yeah, with Sam Bettinardi and Luke, our sales rep. So, sort of got there, went to Bettinardi's studio in Oak Brook first in West Chicago. You never been?
Mm-mm.
Okay, it is the Taj Mahal, but their last name is Bettinardi, right? So real right. Italian. Bob is he's got to have things just so, and I believe his wife. I think his wife's Irish. Never met her. I've never met Sam's mom, but just she picked out all the decorations. I'm telling you, Stevie, the place is beautiful. And I mean, not kind of, not maybe. It is eat off the floor. Beautiful. I got myself a new shirt. It's hanging in the room right now. I'm not wearing it right now. I should have been. But anyhow, the place is sweet. They got really cool stuff. They first class, their service, the way they treat you, the way they talk to you is just very, very nice. Then, like 1.5 miles from their place is in Oak Brook is Butler National, which I think you have to be invited to be a member. I don't think you can apply. It's men only. There's no menu. You just tell them what you want to eat, and they just figure it out. So if you say mac and cheese, they'll just get you mac and cheese. If you tell them crab legs, they'll just find you crab legs. And Sam ordered us quesadillas, and after the round and before the round, we got like omelets, and I had a Caesar salad, and it was just phenomenal. The service is on it. Your drink is right there. Like some of the guys were ordering cheese balls, and some guys were ordering pretzel bites, and they just make you whatever the hell you want. There's no door to the men's locker room because it's men only. So it's just all open air. And it was built in like 72, I think it was. And Sam's the club champion the last 3 out of 4 years. So did we get our chance to play? So yeah, we were sitting there and we called off golf. We canceled our tee time because it was thunderstorms were rolling in. And I looked at the radar and there was like a break between these two big, you know, the big storm that came in a week ago, right? And I was like, dude, it looks to me like we got about 2 hours and 20 minute window. And one of my fitters, Ian, was there. One of my fitters and instructors was there with me. He won this trip and he won this whole thing. And like, it was a big deal to go play with Sam. And Luke was going to join us, our rep, and we're there. So we were like, well, hell with it. Let's just go get in 9 holes. So you have to take caddies, but in this particular case, they let us ride because time was a bit of the essence. So we were able to ride. Our caddies either ran along or hopped in the back or they ran down the fairway to the rough. I started off rough. First 2 holes, I played terrible. And I think I still shot like 43 or 44. Sam, like I said, club champ there the last 3 out of 4 years. The guy is so good. And then Luke, our sales rep, is so good. And then Ian, I think Ian's like maybe in his young 50s. He's just a little bit older than I am. Ian was striping it. He was keeping right up with those guys. I think he might have had one or two birdies. Sam, I think, had two or three birdies. Luke had at least one because he birdied 8, which was a beautiful par 3. So anyhow, we got done with 9 holes. First off, you can drive the carts anywhere you want. You have to get out to putt, but you can drive them anywhere you want.
Really?
So it's just the old, and the grass is pristine. And I mean, it's so plush. Like, if you miss the green, the sand is beautiful, beautiful, like beach sand, but not so soft that you sink into it. Like, it's got that firmness. Like, I'm talking like tour quality, like
Right.
literally quality. Like, I hit two great sand shots because the sand was just so plush but firm. It's hard to, if that makes any sense. If anybody's out there listening to this knows what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking
Well,
about. Like,
I think everybody knows.
yeah, like really good sand where the club moves through it like it should and it doesn't, you know, bounce off it because it's hard dirt or it doesn't dig into it because it's so such soft sand. Like, and the rough, like the aprons around it, the rough is all so good. Like, it's just, you could chip from anywhere. I got up and down like 4 times in 9 holes. Like, the chipping was, I'm not going to call it easy, but man, oh man, when the ball's sitting on a perfect lie every time, it sure as hell helps. Yeah, the green's moving a little slow because it was kind of hot. It was another hot, windy day. So we got in 9 holes, and I was like, hey, dude, this storm's going to hit in like 15, 20 minutes. So we went in and had, and their member guests, their invitational started the next day. So they had a ton of people out on the course with us, and they really keep it moving. The two caddies were like two college kids. One of them plays hockey for some college in Connecticut, and just really cool guys, really down to earth. They said they were at Medina before and they moved over to Butler and they're like, this is where it's at, man. This is a way better club and people treat you better here and there's more money here. You get better tips and all this stuff and whatever. So just first class treatment, first class round of golf. Got in 9 holes, came in, storm hit about 15 minutes after we came in. It stormed.
Oh,
And
yeah,
I
it
drove
did.
home 3 hours and 30 minutes and it rained every second of my drive home. And some of it was raining really hard, like where people were putting their hazards on the expressway. But Sam Bettinardi, I'll say it right now, is a first class human being and gentleman. And then Luke DeHaven, our sales rep, is just a really, really good kid, really nice kid. And then Ian and I just, we were treated so beautifully by the staff at Butler and by the Bettinardi guys. It was just, we had an epic day. Even though we only got in 9 holes, man, it was really, really awesome.
Well, that's great. I wasn't sure if you got it in because those storms, those are pretty,
Yeah.
and they came in
Yeah.
fast and left just as fast, but whew,
Yeah, I
they
get
were
the
rough.
tornado touchdown somewhere in Chicago or something, and I
Yep.
don't know. We didn't see that, but it was like purple on the radar, I can tell you that much. It was wicked.
Well, Bob, that's all I got for you. Well, you know what? I do have one other question for you. What was your take on Wyndham Clark and banging those lockers in at Oakmont now that he's accepted responsibility and all that, which I guess he did right after. But what's your thought on that?
I get it. I understand frustration. I don't think that's exactly the right way to go about it. I think he's probably more mad at himself than anybody else. But when you speed up the greens and make them ridiculous, those green sizes are gigantic. And then when you lower the par down to 70, so it doesn't look like anybody shot under par, you're kind of screwing the golfer over in a few different ways. And so if for him to get frustrated or whatever, like, I don't think that's unreasonable. For him to get frustrated, for him to go banging and damaging the property, I think that's a bit excessive. And he, you know, I had he putted better, made more putts, or hit it more in the fairway, I don't think he would have done that. So who's he really mad at? I don't know. That destruction. I've never really been a fan of destruction, but sending a message isn't. I can understand that. I can understand sending a message. I don't think he did it the right way, but I get it. And then sometimes, you know, you're like I said earlier, you're censored from saying what you really want to say, because as soon as you say something, you know, first off, the media is going to crucify you. Second off, all the trolls on the internet are going to crucify you. And then you're probably going to get fined or whatever, or maybe, you know, ostracized a little bit by actually saying what's on your mind. So not many people do that anymore. So I don't know. I understand it. I don't think it was right. I understand why he did it. I'm not in support of it, but he's trying to say something without saying something.
I think that it was at Oakmont is more of the bigger issue that they got those old Prohibition lockers with the cable pulley system in there to open up where the whiskey was held. They've got all the original spike marks. You know, where help you're probably sitting where Walter Hagen changed his shoes.
Right.
You know, if this would have been at not anywhere else, but if it wouldn't have been there, you know,
right.
Or Augusta, I mean, there you're going to get the same heat, but
yeah,
I get it. I don't think it's the right way to go about it either. I just thought, man, before they actually knew for 100% that it was Clark, he was just getting roasted everywhere.
Right.
All over social media, they were just letting him have it.
That's what I mean. Like, you're gonna get crucified before you do it, don't do it, you know, did do it, didn't do it, doesn't really matter. And like everybody out there is so perfect, right? Like everybody that was roasted him just lives such a perfect life and has never done anything stupid in their life. Like, that's why I just don't cast any stones, dude. I live in a glass house, so he did it, he owned it, he'll probably pay and have it fixed. And like you said, Walter Hagen might have played there someday, or Sam Snead. And then someday somebody's going to go, oh, these are the lockers that Wyndham Clark patched in. Like, he'll be part of the story of the place. So,
yeah, it's just
doesn't make it right. Just makes it part of the story and whatever.
It's like we were talking about in the internet and YouTube, but the same thing is when that news got reported, and if it turned out that it was not Wyndham Clark, it doesn't matter at that point, because it was already right. Wyndham Clark in the public's eyes. You're like, oh, it was him. Exactly. It wouldn't have mattered if he had a full-blown presidential presser. It wouldn't matter.
The retraction is usually a sentence or two, but the story is usually a couple pages. You know, like, you know, Kobe Bryant went through some crap in his life. Did he do it? Did he not do it? It doesn't matter. He was murdered before he – whatever happened. Like, you just, you're guilty as hell. Did it, didn't do it. Who cares? You're dead. So who knows? And Wyndham Clark, I'm glad he owned up to it. And I'm glad he took responsibility for his actions. And he probably, you know, I'm sure he's a bit embarrassed and ashamed for what he did, but you know, you live and you move on. Like, if anybody's perfect, you know, put your hand in the air. Yes. No, I don't think anybody's that perfect. So,
well, all right. Bob, I think that'll wrap us up for this evening. As always, I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you coming on every month and talking with us and taking whatever questions I throw at you.
I can tell you, I enjoy our time together. And, you know, since I started doing my own podcast at Maple Hill, and I have to come up with all the subjects and all the talking. It's kind of just me sitting there rambling on for 20 minutes. And I had Jesse on last week or 2 weeks ago. I appreciate you coming with the questions and coming prepared, and me just sitting here and have to answer whatever the hell you ask me about, because it's way easier, Steve, to just sit here and be the guy who just answers the questions from my own bedroom, just sitting here on my leather chair in my room and not having to think of all the crap. So I really enjoy coming on here and your friendship, and I hope the viewers get a kick out of it. I know we've got a lot of good positive feedback on it. I appreciate you doing all you do, buddy. I really truly do.
Well, everybody, we're gonna let Bob go. Remember to always keep sending your questions in. Bob, like I said, another great episode. I appreciate you coming on, and you have yourself a good evening, sir.
Thank you, my friend. Appreciate you.